I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Hi, guys. Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Heads up, fellow conspiracy realist. This is behind-the-scenes footage, the kind of stuff you might run into in a director's cut of a documentary and so on. Sneaking past the curtain on the show to talk a little bit about the recent Stuff They Don't Want You to Know book. Maybe talk about the title too, to be honest with you. It's been a wild ride. Want to thank everybody who's taken the time to show support here, whether that's by dropping a rating on Amazon or Goodreads, your platform of choice, even more so people who throughout the years have supported the show with excellent questions, excellent recommendations, recording an episode earlier today. Someone just provided news. The Delphi murderer has probably been caught. This show works with live active fire. So today it's going behind the curtain to talk about how this book came about, how the subjects were chosen, and maybe some of the stuff that got cut out. So here are the facts.
That Delphi guy, by the way, lived right down the street. Not really, but metaphorically right down the street from the police office that was investigating those murders since 2017. It's crazy.
That's how it goes.
So, you know, we are very lucky to be part of a network called iHeartRadio. And we were asked to follow in the footsteps of our buds, Josh and Chuck, and write a book based on our podcast. Josh and Chuck wrote a book called Stuff You Should Know. We followed suit by writing a book called Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. And the whole process was really interesting in and of itself, just from, you know, doing the research, assembling the manuscript, realizing how crazy deadlines are in the publishing industry, also kind of realizing how important supply chain stuff is, because the reason deadlines exist are to work backwards from a release date and then book yourself, you know, your company time in a printing press to get the proper number of books or records or whatever it might be printed to meet that goal, you know, for that deadline. And we've seen a lot of issues with that, with vinyl and other, you know, technology, even like PlayStation 5s and all of that kind of stuff. It can be very logistically challenging to meet those goals. So all of this stuff, all of these pieces have their place in the process. And if one thing screws up, it screws up the whole chain of events.
Yeah, you're right. We've learned a lot, guys. We've learned a whole lot in going throughout this process.
Yeah, we've learned quite a bit. And maybe we tackle the biggest question first, which is, why this book? Why this in particular? And why publish it now? I mean, we've been doing a podcast for more than a decade at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's good that we kind of got to it before things became so divisive. We had a little practice. But, you know, things nowadays with the way information, misinformation spread, I mean, you really just kind of have to be the top of your game in terms of like kind of knowing what to look for, how not to be deceived, and also allow that to not completely torpedo your quality of life. It's easy to let this stuff just wear you down, but with just a little bit of critical thinking and armed with some kind of, you know, ability to suss out the fact from the fiction, you too can live a normal life.
Absolutely. And we've been doing this for so long, we've just become accustomed to it. And what we try and do with our podcast is arm you with that information. And for the first time, we've collected a lot of those strategies, a lot of the understanding from all of these years of research, and compiled it into one place, into one book that you can literally pick up for real, in real life, with your hands.
Look, this is no fooling, folks. This is a divisive time. No matter which way you look at it, it's a level of division in the West that has not been seen since the era of civil rights, or even since the bloody days of the U.S. Civil War. So what you hear, what you see, what you encounter in this book is a way to, as you said, Matt, empower yourself and to better arm yourself against bad faith actors who want to sell you a story and hope that you will not have the time nor the tools to verify whether or not that story is in fact true.
It's especially important if you have someone in your life who does question everything and maybe tends to believe what they see on social media more than, let's say, what a mainstream news channel would be saying. It would be a great idea to gift that person this book, because it's designed and written in such a way that it's not going to feel anybody feel strange for holding beliefs that maybe you don't have, that you don't hold. That's kind of the whole point of it. You can read this no matter what you believe, and you're going to pull things out of it that are maybe different than somebody else.
I agree. We don't talk down. We don't talk at. We talk with and we ask. And we want to thank everybody for getting on this crazy adventure with us. Full disclosure, Matt, Noel, and yours truly don't always agree on everything. And we ask ourselves a lot of questions.
I kind of want to pose a question to you guys, if you don't mind, just really quick, just see what you think. When it comes to synthesizing the materials, the like research that we do for these episodes, and you know, the writing, Ben, that you do for these episodes, when it comes to synthesizing that into a book format, what was that process like?
Right. So the common approach to writing a book like this in a nonfiction world, especially dealing with such hot button issues in the West and beyond, is to make it approachable. Often people get caught in information bubbles. That's one of the most successful heist of the information age, is to remove people's ability to look beyond what they know, and perhaps more importantly, to forget that other people may be in a different, overlapping, or entirely separate bubble. In the stuff that this show writes, it is, the approach is primarily to make sure that it is interesting and easy to the ear to hear things. Writing for someone's inner theater of the mind when they're reading is quite different from writing for someone's inner theater of the mind when they're listening. Not everybody's an auditory learner. Not everybody's a visual learner. How does one navigate the difference in this swing? The idea, and of course, deferring to you, Matt, and you, Noel, here in this kind of endeavor, the big question is how to make something enjoyable to read. Because one thing most human beings don't like is feeling lectured, right? Because there's something, sometimes there's something inherently condescending about a lecture, whether or not that's the intent. So when you want to communicate with people, you want to ideally be communicating with them instead of at them. Now, many people have been in conversations where they feel as though someone is not listening to them and just talking at them, right? And that's never a pleasant feeling for the person who has to be the listener or the audience in whatever format that is. So to answer your question directly, Matt, at least in this experience, the idea is how to communicate stuff in an actionable way, in a way that matters, in a way that feels like an open hand, right? Rather than a closed fist. Here are things that have been found. What do you think about them? And Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is immensely fortunate in that it is one of the absolutely most listener-driven shows, honestly, in this speaker's experience, at least.
Absolutely. And, you know, to your point about something being for the ear versus for the eye and the mind, I guess, the theater of the mind that you mentioned. We learned that firsthand too, and we went and did the audiobook of this this work. And you aren't allowed to improv at all. Like, you know, you have to, because of certain cross-referencing things between like Audible and Amazon and different things that, you know, allow things to be kind of connected in terms of like text and audio, you have to read it exactly verbatim. And it's interesting that we're narrating our own book, but if you were, say, a voice actor, they don't want any improv. It has to be word for word what's written in the book. And sometimes when you read out loud, you know, in your voice, what's written, you know, for someone to read silently in their mind, it can really point out some issues and some separations between those two, you know, mediums and ways of experiencing things. And so kudos to all the, you know, the audiobook, professional audiobook readers out there for being able to kind of like bridge that gap, because it's not easy.
Yeah, folks familiar with production and performance, fellow actors as well, you may recognize this as DLP, dead letter perfect, no improvisation allowed. And that may be a wake-up call to a lot of folks. This book does exist in an audio format. Question for you, Noel, and for you, Matt. Was there anything in the process that surprised you along the way in terms of content or in terms of some of the stuff you described, Noel, the whole cavalcade of moving parts?
For me, it was just working with an editor and the book industry in general, in what we were allowed to keep into the book and what we had to take out and how we had to really form the book to a very specific story, kind of.
Well, to give it an arc, you know, to so to speak. Like, they're all about the arc in terms of, like, what is this? What are you trying to express? Like, is it something that can be perceived as a formatted thing with chapter breaks and all of those kinds of things?
Well, it's weird. It felt like there was always a clear vision for this book. I think it's just we had to tighten the scope quite a bit for the purposes of the editor, I think.
For me, it was how much thought and fussiness kind of goes into the cover. The cover is just such an important detail when it comes to marketing a book and making sure that it is as broadly and universally received as possible, that there were little details about the cover that we would never have thought of in a million years that to certain folks were like big red flags or big things like, oh, we got to make sure that we, you know, present it in this certain way that doesn't accidentally trigger somebody or make people think the wrong thing about what we're trying to communicate in terms of like, you know, because this is ultimately a critical thinking conspiracy book that is trying to help people or further people's ability to think critically about the world and about, you know, these conspiracy theories that are out there. I mean, that's what we've always, you know, prided ourselves on doing, and to make sure that nobody accidentally mistook it for something else, and how important the visual design of it is in communicating that idea. Because for a lot of people, that's going to be the first line of like, am I interested in this? Talk about judging a book by its cover. I mean, it is done. It's said as a negative because it's maybe not always the right thing to do, but it is the most common thing to do.
If books are not judged by the cover, then why do books have different covers? Let's just apply some logic to that one. You know, it is clearly a convenient and valid phrase to throw around. This show was quite lucky, quite fortunate to have a good friend in Nick Admiral Turbo Benson, who did all the art, including the cover, which is something this show had to fight for, spoiler alert. So this, there's something that a lot of fellow listeners asked about when getting teases of the book or sneak previews. Why is this solely about government-related conspiracy theories? That's the question, right? This is not an encyclopedic look at the most popular or prevalent conspiracy theories in the Western world or in the Middle Eastern world or in you know, the Pacific theater, etc., or in the Russian world, etc. What this is instead is a focused study, one could say, or it was said to be, you know, a certain percentage folklore, a certain percentage obsessively researched history, and a certain percentage warning signs about the future. However, to the earlier statements, it was attenuated to be, to focus almost entirely on actions of powerful entities like governments and businesses. This was not the original plan. Perhaps it's time to pause for a word from the sponsors and return to dive deeper into the reasonings and perhaps most juicily, the the actual things covered.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's where it gets crazy. So what this episode is going to do now is, with that background you have, fellow conspiracy realist, explore the breakdown and maybe have a little discussion about each of the chapters involved. Let's see. Going to have to look this up. Pardon your faithful correspondent here.
Get your dog-eared copy out of the old desk drawer.
I got a question for you guys on chapter one. It's about biological warfare. Ben, what is the lie within the lie within the lie?
This is a slick way to point out something that happens really often in the age of ubiquitous information. There is often an inherent truth, right, that creates, like, it's the origin call in the great game of telephone that is unanalyzed communication, right? So someone's like, you, if you live in a small town, you've heard how quickly rumors spread, right? If you've ever been in a court of law and listened to eyewitness accounts after the fact, you understand how the stuff gets increasingly embellished over time. The lie within the lie is a bit of a shout out to this sort of process. So the sad truth about biological warfare is that it is an ancient practice. It continues in the modern day. It is going to continue in the future. And it creates a need to obscure the truth, right? These insidious activities by powerful forces. So you create a lie to lie about the things you did. And in the case of governments, you usually, the conspiracy often starts when you're lying about how you screwed something up. And then that creates another lie, right? And then that creates another obfuscation, another prevarication of some sort. But if you go past the lie within the lie within the lie, what you usually find is what the show calls a grain of truth. Big fans of the oyster analogy. Oysters produce pearls, and those pearls always come from a grain of sand. So just like other forms of folklore, just like an oyster creating a pearl, there's something there. Humans don't make things up out of whole cloth, or they can. Individual human beings can, but they do not garner attention. They do not snowball. That's another good comparison, nor escalate unless people, who are all quite intelligent, by the way, can look at a story, can hear it, and can identify something they know to be true at the basis of that story.
Well, and also, like, the pearl that's created from an oyster, that grain of sand that's in there, is a source of irritation. It's like a nagging thing that just won't let up, and then ultimately produces this other thing. And I guess the expression pearls of wisdom maybe comes from that. I don't know. But I do like the idea of that grain of sand being something that other people can identify with, because, like, oh, I was bothered by that too. And why? Let's follow this through. And then ultimately, if you do go through the paces and do the work and do the research and pay attention, you will come out on the other side with this pearl of truth.
And quid pro quo, question for a question then. What were some of your favorite parts about this chapter, or what's something that surprised you?
For me, it was large area coverage, or Operation Large Area Coverage. We've talked about that on the show before in the podcast form, but to see it written out like completely here, it reminds me of that concept of the lie within the lie within the lie, because it's 1957 through 1958, where this thing that the United States government was taking part in, the Army Chemical Corps, they conducted this thing that it just reminds me of something we discuss on this show quite often, which is that when a big problem occurs, you already mentioned it a moment ago, Ben, the conspiracy begins because of a lie, because of a mess up. Right. Because of somebody accidentally did something, or everybody in this case thought spraying these inert materials over the United States wouldn't do anything. These are fine. These are inert agents, biological agents, and we'll be able to track them, but they're not going to do anything to anybody. They're not going to have any effect on anybody. And it didn't turn out that way.
It was, but in general, it was to test fallout patterns, and like how, if we were to be attacked, here's where the stuff would go. And it was sort of like, you know, doing good homework. So I wouldn't say it was necessarily, you know, malevolent from the get-go, but it was also probably not thought through as well as it should have, or the data wasn't really there to know if these, I mean, you know, their best judgment was that it was going to be inert, quote unquote, but that did not end up being the case.
Counterpoint as well there. If Uncle Sam was so, and the ACC were so certain this stuff was inert, why did they target disadvantaged communities? That's one of the big dangerous questions. This also, by the way, is the most likely origin of chemtrail conspiracy theories. And again, to be clear, these are not theories. This stuff actually happened, and this is something, there's a lot of stuff here, and this is a personal opinion said with full sincerity and affection. There's a lot of stuff here that this show had to fight for just to get into this book. There were a lot of things that were considered maybe, not to say too hot for TV or too hot to handle, too cold to hold, call the Ghostbusters because they're in control. It's Halloween as the show records this. So there were a lot of things that had to be fought for here because they were unpleasant. You know, biological warfare is a doozy to start a book with, especially if the book just talks about this one aspect. In The Roots of Biological Warfare, you can find, if you were honest and objective, you can find the predecessor, the precursor to chemtrail theories. You can find the precursor to ideas about fluoridation as a weapon. And this just goes on. The second chapter is all gas, no brakes on human experimentation. Questions for you guys, human experimentation, hot button issue. going into this, what did you think about human experimentation? Did you think it was something that was actively occurring? Did you think it was something that was sort of bonkers? Did you think it was a relic of the unsavory past, like Unit 731 and other World War II endeavors, et cetera?
It's certainly a great follow-up from what we just talked about with biological warfare, because one could argue that what the government did with what Matt was just talking about that's addressed in the book is human experimentation, because they're using humans as test subjects, essentially, even if they wouldn't come out and say it. They said they were tracking wind patterns and stuff. But it goes so much deeper than that with things like the Tuskegee experiments, where again, minority communities were targeted to do horrific tests and dehumanizing treatment of black and brown people.
Yeah, I think commonly the general public, including your faithful correspondent, believe that human experimentation was a World War II thing. Or at least you have that sense about it, because we know about those, right? We've read in our history books and we've seen on documentaries, I think, like you said, Ben, Unit 731 and the things that the Nazis were doing. You can see that stuff. It's written out there. But when you look a little bit, I mean, like, let's say 50, 60 years in the future, and you get to the early 2000s and you look at what's happening in black sites, let's say in the Middle East. Things that are being done by the U.S. government, like, could those be considered human experimentation? Some of the enhanced interrogation techniques? I don't know. It's a question to ask, at least.
That's an excellent question. Yeah, it's an excellent question. And unfortunately, the answers and accountability are often measures of convenience. One of the things that is wrapped up in human experimentation is the next chapter, surveillance. Oh, surveillance. Thank you, surveillance. You are evil, and you've been so good to this show in terms of providing work. So perhaps one of the most enjoyable moments here is the comparison, of current Five Eyes Western surveillance systems to the game 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. This came, talk about behind the scenes stuff, this came from an unnamed source who used to work for a little something called the Puzzle Palace and remains one of the best analogies/comparisons for the large-scale application of surveillance now. It's not who you know, folks. It's not who you know and who they know. It goes all the way out. As a matter of fact, it's a surveillance system that is built by design to theoretically monitor the activities of more people than exist in the world at present. On publication of this book, several folks wrote to the show and said that they understood where the argument was coming from, but those folks brought up budgetary constraints, which is the funniest thing. It just confirms another thing this show says often, which is that the government programs are fighting against each other and always need more money. But surveillance, did it change anything for you, Noel, or for you, Matt, about how you behave? This show, or the culmination of this book?
In a way, but ultimately what the research for this book and what's actually included in here in this chapter just made me think more and more about the 1960s through the 80s. I'm sorry, that's just what it did for me, because we went through the Edward Snowden saga in Prism, right? We were making this show when that was occurring, so we got to cover that in real time. I feel like I have a personal understanding of that. That's at, let's give it a 70%. I feel pretty good. I can get a C if I talk about that just extemporaneously. But what I don't know a ton about, or what I didn't know until we wrote this book, was the stuff that was happening around in the Echelon days, in, you know, those earlier days where there were also whistleblowers. What is it, Ben? Margaret Newsham? Margaret, I know for sure, talked about Echelon, and she worked at Lockheed, And she found out about this stuff, and then she became a whistleblower and told the world about it, essentially. And I think there's Echelon, by the way, just another one of these, a spying effort, or I guess an intelligence effort to send signals to the United States government to monitor stuff that's going through like satellite dishes for communications, and the Soviet, monitoring Soviet communications. So that's like 1960s, 1970s we're talking about. But I didn't know about that stuff. And, you know, if you don't know about it, maybe you should read this chapter.
Not to make it sound too much like an infomercial, folks, but yes, this is not common knowledge. It's not stuff.
Oh, no, I'm making it full infomercial.
So there are more things to get to. Surveillance, as you can probably tell, this show gets involved very quickly with these things. These are things the show believes are important. Probably best to skip UAP, UFOs right now. There's a chapter on that. Stuff they don't want you to know, fought to keep that in the book. No regrets there. There's a recent ongoing UAP, UFO news. Check out recent episodes for that. Quick, you know, game time decision maybe. How about cutting to a commercial break and then talking just briefly about things like propaganda, coups, assassinations, secret societies, lobbying, and of course, what better way to end? Drugs.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Returned. Propaganda, smack dab in the middle of the work. One of the concepts that inspired the bizarre journey that began in the first place all these years ago.
Yeah, of the podcast, like Bernays, and just the idea of what marketing is and how inextricable is marketing from propaganda at the end of the day, and the psychological concepts that are in place to convince people to do stuff.
This one leads right into coups and assassinations, because one of the big things Bernays convinced the U.S. population to do was to be okay with war and to want war, because it would be good for us and it would be good for everybody involved. We need to go to war. So let's talk coups and assassinations, you guys.
Sure. Yeah. The euphemism is targeted killings, which is not super great as far as euphemisms go. It could be something, you know, something like non-consensual hospice decisions. So tip your waitstaff and so on. So this idea, the idea of a coup is, and an assassination, they're ugly things. And things most politicians and multinational conglomerates don't want to be openly associated with, but they happen. The United States alone has launched, aided, or abetted many, many coups. So much so, in fact, that when this show was doing some research on the ongoing protests in Iran, one of the immediate questions the show had to ask was, is Uncle Sam involved? Because Uncle Sam sure as heck was instrumental in the 1979 coup that sent that country, again, full of innocent people, down such a horrific path. It's enough to make one wonder whether there was some sort of cabal, dare say a secret society at play. What serendipity. What a coinky dink. Shout out to you, listener. Turns out that's the next chapter. Secret Societies talks in depth about the true provable origins of the groups calling themselves Illuminati. Crazy plot twist here, fellow listeners. The folks who called themselves Illuminati were the good guys in their story. They weren't jerks. They weren't trying to take over the world. They were trying to fight against an oppressive regime that considered anything off base from a very particular sort of Christian theology to be thought crime. They really were the good guys.
Yeah, and just like other Enlightenment era kind of secret societies that were usually rebelling against codified ignorance or in some way codified blind faith, you know, just following the state or some religious organization, you know, like the Catholic Church. So over time, I think, you know, in secrecy, often it's easy to find reasons that people might want to keep their activities secret because they're nefarious. They are nefarious activities. But again, no spoilers. There are certainly nefarious secrets out there. But in general, I think folks would be surprised at how much this concept is co-opted to breed fear versus what they actually historically were and represented.
Ben, what is your favorite secret society that's in the book?
Well, a favorite secret society in this book, heavily alluded to, would probably be the thing that functions very much like a deep state, which brings brings this show to the next chapter of this book, which is political corruption, aka lobbying, aka the thing that is hilarious to explain to all your friends who are not from the U.S., who don't understand rightly why the U.S. has such a problem being honest with itself. And look, entities in the U.S. bribe the government all the time. They just call it lobbying. It's a very different thing. And in politics have become a real third rail in discourse in the United States. That's to the detriment of the country. And to be honest, there's a conspiracy there. That is a personal opinion, not to inject oneself too much. Why is that opinion there? Because if there is one winner in all the sound and fury of increasingly tribalistic politics, it's big business. Always has been. There's not really what one would call a people's movement. Now, lest that immediately be thought terminated into a cliche of socialism, by people's movement here, that means simply some sort of movement that says, why not support the other 330-something million people who live, sweat, celebrate, and die in this country? How did the propaganda become so pervasive, so convincing? The answer is cabals. The answer is political corruption, right? And if you want to look to the effectiveness of this, all one has to do, at least in this country, is to look toward the war on drugs, which is the final chapter of this book.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, on one level, it could be argued the war on drugs has been incredibly successful in that it's been very profitable and allowed a lot of folks that maybe were not otherwise going to be subject to this, especially after the end of slavery, to be enslaved. Essentially, I mean, the idea of certain low-level nonviolent drug crimes being a gateway into getting the prison population kind of amped up, and then what that leads to in terms of folks using prison labor, you know, for commercial purposes.
Man, drugs really are profitable, aren't they?
Yeah, the drugs themselves and the war against them, because the war on drugs is itself a propaganda war. It's a war that can never be won, which is honestly, if you're Uncle Sam or your big business or your whomever is profiting, that's the kind of war you want to wage.
A war against an idea can never be truly won, right? And that is a beautiful thing. Consider also the model of big monopolies and corporations. Never accuse human beings of being super original. If you are a faction, legal department probably requires the show to phrase it thusly. If you are a faction of the company, the CIA, then why not practice a little bit of vertical integration? Why not control the manufacturers of the drugs? Why not control the transit routes of those drugs? Why not control the profits?
Hey, and maybe even try and get your hands in that distribution model. Maybe. Probably not. That might be too difficult.
And all of this is, you know, laid out very lucidly in this chapter.
And this is very quick. This episode has not answered some of the questions about what ended up getting left out. Entire chapters on cryptids, on ghosts, on the evolution of folklore surrounding what people think of when they think of monsters. Where does the idea of the lycanthrope, the skin changer, the shapeshifter come from? What about the idea of the vampire? Why did both pop up independently throughout ancient civilizations? That might be something for a second book.
100%.
There's an original finale chapter, and it was all about Mothman's abs. We had to take the whole thing out.
And how much he looks like He-Man. A He-Man action figure. Yeah, it's true. But no, it's true. I mean, and again, another interesting part about working with the publishing world is it is important to focus things. And we have the luxury with the show about every episode kind of being its own thing. One episode after the other, unless it's a multi-parter, doesn't really have to, you know, be kind of siloed. And in a book, you kind of do have to do that. So we really did have to hone things down a little bit. And what you get is an exhaustively researched book about real conspiracies, specifically involving, you know, the government and the things they literally don't want you to know, and how to discern the conspiracy reality from the conspiracy theory.
I would say what's particularly cool about this, guys, in this show, we are constantly calling back to other episodes we've done. We did a full episode on that, a full episode on this, back in 2016, back in 2013. In this book, you actually get to see that entire arc and the connections laid out as you go. And the flow is really smooth. So it really does take you on a journey. I am selling it hard because I think you should buy this book, both for yourself and for somebody you care about. Right now, I don't care.
And if you don't care for that book, why not buy it for your enemies? Perfect, perfect gift. Thank you so much to everyone who made this possible. Again, thank you to you, fellow conspiracy realists. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope it's a kind of read that keeps you up at night, or in the case of the audiobook, helps you catch some Z's and slumber along with some ASMR. Question for you, the most important part of the show. What do you think? What would you like to see in another book? Let the show know. Trying to be easy to find online.
Yeah, we try and usually succeed. And that you can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram.
Phone number 1-833-STDWYTK. It's a voicemail, 3 minutes, go. If you don't want to leave us a message, why not send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.